I miss a green, for example. I'm already upset. When I find my ball in the bunker, I'm really upset. And when I find my ball in a
fried egg.
Fried egg.
The dreaded fried egg.
Fried egg.
Fried egg.
Fried egg.
Fried egg.
Fried egg lie, I'm about ready to run off the golf course.
Welcome to the Fried Egg Golf Podcast. I'm Garrett Morrison, and the Augusta National Women's Amateur is back. There will be a stacked field at Champions Retreat in Augusta National next week, and we're here to tell you about a few players to watch out for. We'll also talk with one of the biggest stars in the field, Stanford University's Megha Ghane. Megha is one of the top players in college golf, and you may recall her from the time she contended for a U.S. Women's Open at Olympic Club in 2021. She was actually in that final pairing with Lexi Thompson and the eventual champion, Yuka Saso. We're very excited to speak with Megha. We've wanted to have her on the pod for a while, but before getting into ANWA, we thought we'd check in with the LPGA Tour and just see what's been going on there. So all of that is coming up. But first, let's talk about golf in Ireland. Now, if you've been following our Explorations content, which I hope you have because it's been really great in my opinion, you know that the island of Ireland is a golfer's paradise. It has over 400 courses, one-third of the world's true links courses, and exceptional championship layouts surrounded by epic landscapes. Those championship courses include Royal Portrush and Royal County Down, both in Northern Ireland. Royal County Down is going to be hosting the Amgen Irish Open this September. That is this year, so that's going to be really fun to watch. And then the Open Championship is going back to Royal Portrush in 2025. So some big tournaments coming up there. Lots of reasons to get out to Northern Ireland specifically. Now, in addition to golf, one of the remarkable things about the island of Ireland is the hospitality that accompanies any golf experience out there. The 19th hole is just the joyful ending point of any day of golf out there. And where better to do that than the confines of a great pub where you can relax after a great 18 holes at one of Ireland's many world-class golf courses. So if you're interested in an Irish golf experience, go to ireland.com/golf and book your trip today. All right, let's get into some LPGA Tour golf before talking about ANWA. Here to discuss everything with me today is Fried Egg Golf's project manager, merch czar, and women's golf correspondent. It's quite a list of titles there. Meg Atkins. Meg, how are you doing today?
I'm doing good, Garrett. Good to be here. And yes, we all wear many hats at Fried Egg. I'm not the only multi-hyphenate here. So excited to talk some golf with you.
Yeah, we're gonna do some travel next week. We're getting out of the house and going to Augusta. We're both gonna be covering ANWA as we did last year. So we thought we'd get together and you know, do a little bit of preview of that tournament. But while we're doing that, we thought we would talk about what's been going on in the LPGA Tour season so far, because it's really been pretty interesting. So we're going to do a couple of storylines here, two storylines, major storylines from this season of LPGA golf. So I'm going to turn it over to you, Meg. What's your first storyline that people should be paying attention to on the LPGA Tour so far this year?
Yeah, it's the big names showing up. You know, the start of the season is always a little bit disjointed just with the nature of the schedule. You know, time off after the initial tournaments to go to Asia, and then time off after Asia for travel and whatnot. But the players have managed to make this you know, kind of choppy start to the season really interesting. We've had a couple playoff wins for Nelly Korda. Lydia Ko's won and is now on the cusp of a Hall of Fame berth. Patty T has also gotten back into the winner's circle after a long, long break there. And then you have Hannah Green. So all major winners, the exception being Bailey Tardy, who won in China. So the big names are playing
well.
Was
like toward the top in a U.S. Women's Open or something fairly recently, right? I remember her name popping up. I forget where.
Yeah, she played great at Pebble. And that was kind of my first introduction to her, but, you know, Georgia's standout player. And for her win, I think she went 7-under through her last 11 holes to kind of just take that title. So what I've been hoping for and wanting for the past few seasons is kind of to catch a break with injuries and with everyone's kind of games not really aligning, the big names, and we've got that now. It's awesome to see Nelly knock off two early wins. I think, you know, the longer the storyline goes for Lydia with this Hall of Fame berth on the line, every tournament she enters, that's intriguing storyline too. So, you know, really a great start for the LPGA season when they don't really set it up to be to start off with momentum with how the schedule is. But, you know, really, really fun finishes when that continued over on Sunday with Nelly's win over Ryan O'Toole in just crazy conditions and wind at Palos Verdes. So, you know, now that we kind of wrapped up the first part and are looking at the majors on the horizon, I think for Nelly, you know, the expectations just get ramped up even more on, okay, when are we going to get that second major? So, you know, in about 3 weeks, she'll have the chance at the Chevron in Houston, and then we'll roll right into the rest of the major schedule and the real meat of this season. But really, I mean, I can't stress it enough how entertaining some of these finishes have been, even if you've had to stay up late to watch, or, you know, not the easiest to find some of these tournaments on the broadcasts. But yeah, it's been a fun start. I mean, honestly, outside of the players, I think the finishes on the LPGA side have been much more exciting and with more intriguing storylines than on the PGA side of things. And that's with, you know, not so exciting courses, a lot of travel and not exactly a smooth start to the season schedule-wise.
Yeah, kind of a herky-jerky start, but this has been something that we've been talking about for a couple of years now. That's just the way this start of the LPGA Tour season is in January, February, March. It really does seem to settle in the month of March, and then we're kind of on to major season. I'm not sure I love the cadence as it is, but there have been good tournaments, and that has really kind of carried the day so far. Nelly Korda definitely, you know, starting to live up to the hype, I want to say, although it's not just hype around here. It's always been legitimate. You know, she is a genuinely amazing ball striker, but she maybe hasn't won at the rate that we've expected. And part of that is because of some health issues, some injury issues that she's been grappling with for the past couple of years. But she really does seem to be in dominant form right now. Her win at Palos Verdes was very impressive for a number of reasons. One was that the conditions on the last day, as you mentioned, were very, very tough. And one of the fun little side stories for me on that day were the things that the players were wearing. There was like lots of little creative ways to shield themselves from the elements that you don't typically see male players do.
Earmuffs in spring are a rare sight, but always a welcome sight.
It was fantastic. But in any case, she was, you know, well ahead midway through the final round, then kind of lost it on the last couple of holes, bogey, bogey, but then, you know, put her stamp very, very assertively on that playoff. So, you know, how would you assess where Nelly's at right now?
Yeah, listen to her press conference afterwards, and she was actually asked, you know, how do you stack up how you're playing right now to your peak, which I think everybody would consider that 2021 season when Olympic gold, her major, four titles and just top 10. And I think, you know, almost every start, it seemed like. And for her, she kind of joked, you know, well, it's been so long since that peak that I can't really compare the two. But I was impressed with her how she talked about mentally quickly venting about that finish, which, you know, was definitely put their momentum if you were betting on that playoff, even with Nelly's accolades, definitely put the momentum in Ryan O'Toole's camp. She drained a long par putt on 18 to get herself to 9 under than to meet Nelly. But she, you know, Nelly talked about, yeah, I vented, kind of got it out. My coach said, all right, are you ready to go play now? And she refocused herself, got on the tee and got it done and on the first hole there. So let's also not forget that this comes off of a 7-week break. She didn't play in the Asian swing at all. Took some time off to do some traveling to Prague. Her sister Jess Korda had a baby, so playing the aunt role a little bit. And it wasn't just the travel, but you know, she didn't touch a club for almost half of that 7 weeks. So, you know, I think one, that bodes well to just not have, you know, a whole lot of rest after that break. And then two, with the LPGA schedule, you know, maybe we're getting a fresher Nelly into this bulk of the season, into the meat of the schedule where, you know, the majors are going to come at a fast clip and then we're going to roll straight into Olympics and Solheim Cup. So if we are seeing kind of Nelly start to peak, you know, maybe that break when we're talking at the end of the summer, if she's still playing well, we're talking more about how great that break was for her to stay fresh, through the grind of the season.
All right, let's get a second storyline.
I kind of wrote about this a little bit in the newsletter, last Friday. I think it's really interesting and I'll offer up a caveat that, you know, the sport to sport comparison is never apples to apples, but, if you've been paying attention to the overall, you know, sports landscape, you know that women's sports is having a moment here right now, with just the popularity of basketball, with Caitlin Clark phenomenon. And then last week, the new NWSL season started. And I wanted to kind of talk about women's sports in general, because there really has not been a better time to be leading a women's sports league. And the time is quickly becoming now for Molly Marcus-Simon to capitalize on this momentum. And I want, you know, I think it's helpful to look at other sports and how they have taken advantage and have, you know, really kicked down the door in many ways, whether it be with expanding their leagues, with media deals, with viewership numbers, and how can golf kind of take a piece of that pie that, you know, and take advantage of what's going on with women's sports. So if you look at, you know, Molly Marcus-Simon's tenure and what she came into when she was hired on as commissioner, you know, Mike Wann had built the league back up, but she came from Princeton. She came from academia and she went on, you know, a year long learning tour, as she described it, to just kind of figure out this new landscape and how to tackle it. And if you look at soccer and the NWSL, Jessica Berman comes on shortly after Molly Marcus-Simon. So very similar tenures here. And she comes into the NWSL that is mired in scandal, a mess of a league, zero player trust. And she doesn't have the luxury of a listening tour. She's got to get in and turn things around immediately. And Jessica Berman comes from a background in the NHL where she, you know, many, many years going up the ladder in that league, was responsible for, you know, negotiating the lockout deal years ago. And she just comes out, you know, guns blazing. I think the most important thing that she did was demand the team ownership's step up. And I think that has a very, you know, obviously golf doesn't have teams, but we have these sponsors of tournaments. And what was happening in soccer was you had these passive team owners. Alexis Ohanian, founder of Reddit, is I think the majority stakeholder in Angel City, the LA NWSL.
Husband of Serena Williams.
Yes, husband of Serena Williams, and also part owner, or I don't know the exact title, of the TGL team, LAGC. So he actually spoke about this, you know, when he kind of came on and was meeting other owners. He's talking to one owner, and it was like, you know, yeah, I have a daughter, and this is kind of like a, you know, charity thing to kind of show her something that I'm supporting women's sports. And what you've seen is that kind of totally flip on its head, where those owners are now out and you have owners who don't see this as a charity, but see it as an investment in something they're going to make money on. And you've seen the valuation of the teams go up. You've seen new owners come in with big time dollars, celebrities, other athletes. Eli Manning has a stake in a team. Patrick Mahomes and Brittany Mahomes are co-owners and stakeholders in the Kansas City team here. And you've seen major, major investment. And what that's brought is, you know, these severely undervalued teams are now selling at, you know, 20 times what they were selling for in the past. The league has expanded. They signed a mega media rights deal with multiple, you know, streaming options, Amazon, CBS, multiple venues for their product. And if you're the LPGA, if you're Molly Marcus Simone right now, if you're not sitting down with what there surely are passive tournament sponsors on the LPGA side of things that, you know, have been doing this for a certain amount of years, throw an extra 100K to the purse each year and, you know, call it good. If you're not sitting down with some of those sponsors and having the conversation that, you know, the things have changed and it's time to step up in a bigger way, you know, you can have that conversation with the confidence now with where women's sports is at, that you'll have another sponsor up to the plate if they're not willing to do that. And I think that's where, yes, soccer and golf are not the same, but you can take a page out of that playbook from soccer and what Jess Berman has done and start really putting sponsors to the fire of truly investing in golf, whether that's, you know, new tournaments, whether that's new venues, whether that's bigger purses. We've kind of been baby stepping the way into things with golf right now, and it's time to kind of take that big next step and get onto the same level as kind of soccer, basketball, and others have gotten to.
And broadcast partners probably need a kick in the butt as well.
Yep. Yep. But they're not going to be the leader there. I think they're going to see investment from other sponsors and, you know, other money coming in through new tournaments or purses or sponsors for players. And they're going to follow suit. I don't think we can expect them to be the leader on that forefront, unfortunately.
Yeah. The media rights deal is not really exclusively their own, right? The LPGA sort of has piggybacked on the PGA Tour's media rights deal. But clearly there are some improvements that could be made in that arena as well. All right, cool. So with that, let's get into the next generation of potential LPGA Tour stars, or in a few cases, star amateurs on the women's side. Let's do some players to watch at the Augusta National Women's Amateur. So Meg, before we bring Mega on, let's try to do these in a kind of lightning round style. Who is your first player to watch for at Augusta National next week?
I'm going with Taylor Gooch's favorite player, asterisk Tally. She's the youngest player in the field. She just turned 15 a couple months ago, about in February, I believe. And she is coming in with some momentum. She just won the Junior Invitational, which is an elite junior tournament, by six. So she's got some familiarity with Augusta, too, as a drive, chip, and putt participant. Maybe she peaked too early, but I think she's got some confidence coming into to Anwa to hopefully make a run there.
Okay, my first player to watch is also a very young player, 17 years old, Yana Wilson. Absolute stud on the junior scene. She was the 2023 AJGA Girls Player of the Year. She's number one in the AJGA rankings. She's a University of Oregon commit, and you know, this is her third ANWA, right? So she's pretty young, but she's been here a few times. She won on the Cactus Tour fairly recently, quarterfinals at the U.S. Women's Amateur. This is a serious, serious player and somebody to watch out for many years to come. So Yana Wilson. All right, who's your next player?
All right, we're keeping it with the teenagers. I'm going to go with Ayla Galitsky. She's a 17-year-old from Thailand. She's committed to South Carolina. She also played in the Junior Invitational. She finished third at an even par, but that's nine back of asterisk. But I was really impressed. She played in the LPGA's Thailand event earlier this year, made the cut, finished T41. So very good playing with the best of the best over there in Thailand. And we'll see what she can do at Augusta.
All right. And my last player is Hayley Cooper. So we've talked about teenagers so far. Hayley Cooper is 24 years old. So absolutely ancient, right? Uh-huh. This is she's still young, of course. Hayley Cooper played her final collegiate tournament for Texas A&M last year. She helped the team get to match play at the NCAA championships. Haley's got a great backstory. She was an elite junior. She actually won the U.S. women's amateur four ball when she was still in high school, and was a first team All-America at the University of Texas in 2019. But then her game just sort of hit a rough patch. I'm not totally sure what happened. She did get invited to ANWA in 2021, but had to withdraw because she tested positive for COVID-19. So this year is actually her ANWA debut. In any case, she's gotten her game back recently. She got her undergraduate degree from Texas in 2021, I think, and she got it in 3 years. So she's obviously got a pretty good head on her shoulders. Then she went to Texas A&M for her master's degree, and she just rediscovered her game, had a really great 2023 season. So I think that's a feel-good story to watch out for. So there are a bunch of other names that I think people will recognize if they've seen past Augusta National Women's Amateurs. These names would include Amelia Miliacho, who is playing her fifth. I don't think there's anybody else in the field who has played literally every one of these tournaments. Yeah, and she's planning to be a career amateur. She's been on the podcast before. Absolutely delightful person. Ingrid Lindblad is a potential favorite here. This is her fourth ANWA. You know, I don't know if there's anybody else you would really choose to be the sole favorite here, but there's a good argument for Lindblad. Amari Avery playing her fourth and last ANWA. Rachel Keene in her fourth. Carolina Lopez Chikara, right? You'll recognize that last name, is also playing her fourth ANWA. We've got Rachel Heck, who just announced recently through an essay in No Laying Up that she has chosen to remain an amateur and not turn professional in golf. But she's coming back to play in her third ANWA. Anna Davis is the returning champion. Gianna Clemente, still 16 years old, but this is her second ANWA. I believe she is still the youngest or one of the two youngest players in the field. So obviously a very, very talented player. So lots of people to watch out for here. I'm not sure if I missed anybody.
No, that covers the big names. You know, it's feels a little bit different without Rose this year. That was obviously the main storyline last year leading in. But ANWA never disappoints. If you know, all these names kind of show up, we'll have a very, very exciting Saturday.
Of course, one name that we haven't mentioned yet is Mega Gane. And Mega has an incredible resume that she's bringing into this ANWA. And we're bringing her on the podcast right now. But before we get to her, let's talk quickly about Blackjack Jerky. So Blackjack Jerky started as a father-son idea. They were hiking the Appalachian Trail. They needed a solid protein source that could survive in their backpacks for a couple of days and hopefully just taste better than whatever they would get at the gas station. And so they decided to come up with their own jerky brand. And the result is a very flavorful, tender, and satisfying jerky with just the right amount of chew. The Blackjack barbecue beef jerky is real top round beef, hand-carved, soaked in their legendary marinade, and smoked over pecan wood. No dehydrator, no liquid smoke, just the real deal, the real jerky. So you can try this on your next hike or on the golf course. Jerky is a great thing to put in your golf bag and take out on the golf course. Fills you up, makes it so you're not hungry. You don't want to be trying to play golf when you're hungry. You know, that's not the right way to go. For Fried Egg listeners, the deal that Blackjack Jerky is offering is this: 20% off a single bag or a 3-bag purchase using Fried Egg as the promo code. That's just Fried Egg, all one word. A 5-bag purchase will be 20% off, as well as free shipping. So those are your options. And here is the URL. It is localpalletmarketplace.com/pages fried-egg-golf. Or if you just want to go to our newsletter and click the link there, we're running blackjack jerky ads. So check out the newsletter and you can get to our special fried egg blackjack jerky page through that method as well. So blackjack jerky, check it out. All right, so we are here with Mega Gane. First of all, Mega, how did finals go?
It went. passed all my classes. I took kind of a heavy quarter, and I took computer science for the first time this quarter, which was it was going well until it wasn't. But I'm glad I took the challenge. I took it with my teammate Paula, and good bonding experience. But very glad those 10 weeks are over.
I've heard that computer science is a big deal at Stanford. That's the word on the street.
Yeah, it's like it was like a must take class. So it's done.
You guys, you figured out a pretty good way to wrap up finals week. You guys played some golf, didn't you, over the weekend? You want to tell everyone where you played and how that went?
Yeah, we played Cypress Point right after we were done with finals, which was the best prize you could have asked for. It was so good. Like, if there's anything better than playing Cypress, it's playing it right after you finish finals. So it was perfect weather, so good. We went out there. It was unreal. That was like one of my last few courses on my like my top tier bucket list. So I definitely did some pro shop damage, and yeah.
She's just like us.
I am.
Yeah. So Cypress, but you hadn't played there before. This was your first time.
No, hadn't played there. First time.
Wow. Any surprises or observations from seeing the course for the first time?
It's like the whole, I love the separation of like each of the six holes, like the ones, like how different they were from each other. I didn't know much about like the history of the course. So that was cool to learn about. And then the last few were just insane. Like I've played Pebble multiple times. I've played Spanish Bay. So like the area, like I'm familiar with what it looks like, but those holes are just gorgeous. Like they're not, you're just not prepared for them. So it was super, super cool. And I bought a huge painting that's going to go up in my, my bedroom. So.
Oh, no way. What's the painting of?
It's of 16.
Yeah. Yeah. Of course. It's a pretty good one to have. Yeah.
So next to my Augusta painting that I have.
Oh, Amen. Wow. So. Not bragging at all with those. So you are familiar with the Pebble Beach area. You took down the Carmel Cup last fall, I believe. What did you shoot in the final round there?
I think 67.
Okay. Which is pretty good. So what's what to use the key to doing that kind of damage at Pebble Beach?
Ooh, well, good conditions. I didn't have to deal with anything crazy, which was a big help. But also just, I think that week I just had a game plan on every single hole. And I had a great caddy as well, who was a local there in the practice round. And they can give you advice during the real thing, but he loaded up in the practice round. So I just felt like I had a great strategy on every hole. Felt like it was just two putt, move on, like type of golf. So it just, that course definitely suits my eye well. Because my first freshman year, that was the first event I played my freshman year, played well there. And then this year I just, yeah, it was... just felt good. Every shot just kind of feels right. So
nice.
Yeah.
So the college season is about to pick up here. How would you assess the state of the Stanford team right now?
It's great. From the outside and inside, I feel like we feel great. And our team chemistry is kind of ridiculous right now, which I've felt... I mean, it was really good last year, but this year there's like, I just feel like we move around each other so well, which is so important. And, you know, having eight women that get along that well is pretty impressive in my opinion. And I think that's what really drives us every day. And like, we just love being at the golf course every day, which makes a huge difference when you're, you know, working to a larger goal and just enjoying the process and doing that with each other. I think that's really what leads to our success in tournament golf.
You have a new member of your team this year.
Yes.
You mentioned Paula. her full name is Paola Martín San Pedro. Yes. Okay, good. So there's the pronunciation. She was in your computer science class with you. This is a pretty sensational freshman player. Could you give me a basic scouting report on Paola?
Paola, she's just consistent. She just does everything that people have told me. They come up to me on the putting green after the rounds at tournaments, and they're like, "Yeah, your freshman doesn't miss. Like, she just doesn't. She doesn't miss." And I'm like, "Yeah, I haven't seen it yet either." But she's super cool. She's great off the golf course. We've gotten really close actually because of this computer science class, which is nice. But she's such a hard worker, and she's so intelligent in the classroom. She's taking insane class load, which is, the golf is impressive, but doing that with what I'm seeing behind the scenes is even more impressive. So definitely pushing me to get better as well.
Yeah. So she's from Spain, and she is going to be in ANWA as well. So that's a little preview of what people might see there. But her results so far this college season have been
phenomenal.
Pretty eye-popping, like top 10 in everything as far as I can see. So yeah, that kind of consistency is impressive. Speaking of consistency, Rose Zhang obviously turned pro last year, but she's hanging around. When I heard that she was going to do this, like be on the LPGA tour and also finish out her degree at Stanford, I was like, how is that even possible? Have you seen Rose around campus? Have there been any sightings? Is she kind of still hanging around there?
Yeah, she's hanging around. When she was here, I would see her almost every day. But I think it's great. I think if I had to leave college right now, like my sophomore year, I would definitely love to come back from a quarter and feel like a student that's just living a regular life, even though that's not what she's doing. But I think that's great. I think it's a really cool balance that she's able to strike. And I feel like I would do the same. I love her situation of tour to Stanford and then coming back and forth. It's amazing.
Wait, are you giving us a little preview of
what you're going to look at? No, I'm not giving a preview. I'm staying for 4 years, but I'm saying I think she's doing the right thing.
Okay. Sounds good.
Yeah.
All right, Meg, you want to get into Mega's experiences at Augusta National a little bit here?
Yeah, I do. I mean, Garrett, you mentioned it, but the drive, chip, and putt. What's the experience like? I mean, being so young, and you've talked about, you know, being more nervous at there, you know, having just those couple shots to hit under all that pressure and all the crowds there. Obviously, probably the biggest crowds you've ever played golf at that point. Just talk through what that experience is like being so young.
Yeah. I love the drive, chip, and putt. It's like, it's an initiative like no other. And like, it really is the most pressure you've ever felt. And they run it so well and make you feel like you are feel like you're getting top notch treatment from start to end. And it's so cool. I mean, like, what other tournament in junior golf is like that? And when do you get to experience something that feels so high level, other than something like the drive, chip, and putt? And, you know, everyone tunes in for those few hours where it's on TV. And it's super cool. It's like a taste of the big leagues when you're just 9 years old. And I loved it. I think it prepared me for a lot of golf for the rest of my amateur career. And yeah, I'm just super grateful. And I going to the ANWA now, I feel it feels like way more like home when I'm there, because I've just been there since I was a kid. So I'm very grateful for the drive, chip, and putt. I think it was a pretty big part of my story.
Yeah. So rolling from that into ANWA, this is your fourth ANWA appearance. Miscut T9 last year. So talk through kind of, you know, those first couple years out there not qualifying for the Saturday on the big course on Augusta National, and then the success last year, you know, top 10's an incredible job out there. And then what do you think this year has in on hold for you?
Yeah. I think that first course we play on Champions Retreat, it was not my place for a good while, but it had like a setup that I didn't feel like really suited me, and like I didn't have the ball striking to really score there. And on top of that, it's a 30 person cut of the top 70 in the world, so if you're not on it, you're not going to make that cut. So I came close both years, but just didn't quite have the shots in the bank that I needed. And I really reflected on that before last year's event, made a couple swing changes, equipment change, hit the ball higher. And yeah, it just came together and I just, I just had a greater bank of shots that I could hit, which helped me on that golf course. And then played well at Augusta, which was like completely different from the first course. So it was great. And this year, yeah, just trying to do more of the same. And it's nice. And another big thing too is when the first few years I was still in high school, so I'm coming out of a New Jersey winter, so I had no outdoor practice going into it. So that definitely has something to do with it being here now.
Yeah, I mean, you've pointed out one of the crazy things about Anwa, and it's the differences between the two courses. So how is it that Augusta National is so different from Champions Retreat? How do you see those as kind of different tests of your golf game?
Yeah, like for, I don't know, maybe everyone will have a different take, but I feel like the general consensus is that Champions Retreat is more demanding. I think the conditions we play the courses in make it harder because for whatever reason, the greens have just been way harder to hold at Champions Retreat. It's been windier there than it has been at Augusta. It's just setup wise, it feels like it's less scoreable and you just make one bogey and then you're fighting for the cut line. So it's just, the intensity is so high on those first few days. It doesn't even feel like the same tournament almost as the final day. And then yeah, Augusta's just different. You need to play well at both, but Champions Retreat's a ball striker's golf course, I think.
Yeah. And so this year, what I kind of found was pretty wild number. You have four of your teammates also competing at Anwa, as well as four future Cardinal coming on too. So,
and Walker, I mean, maybe the best recruiter in history.
Best recruiter in the world, right? Of any sport.
No kidding.
Yeah.
So you have a big support system there, which will be, I'm sure, very, very nice to have your teammates there with you. Kind of continuing on with Anwa. You know, first edition was 2019. And then I wanted to talk a little bit about how, you know, NIL and that coming into the picture has kind of changed kind of the look and feel a little bit of Anwa. We were, Garrett and I were both there last year, and you kind of see some, you know, like azalea themed bags and head covers and whatnot. Can you talk, you know, since this is your fourth, can you talk how NIL has kind of changed and in the anticipation and the buildup from sponsors for Anwa? I think it's just interesting with the timing, it not being there at the beginning. And now it seems to be, especially with the bigger names and the favorites, you know, they've got kind of special edition gear all over the place.
Yeah, I think Augusta is marketing wise and, you know, publicity, it's like a dream because you have the coolest women playing the sport at the best place and great TV coverage. And it feels like everyone's tuning in. And it's, yeah, I think NIL is great and it helps grow the game on a lot of levels. And it's definitely getting bigger and bigger. And, you know, equipment wise or brands or clothing or even financial groups, like people definitely see the value in investing in the highest level of women's golf, because I think it just has, you know, the ability to grow the game and touch a lot of hearts, because the competitors that I know, like, they're just really special people. And it's cool that people outside of the golf community are able to tap into that and take women's golf to the next level. And yeah, that it's all good things to say. And I've been lucky enough to have some experience with NIL and good partnerships in the last few years. So it's been a very new experience, but, you know, my support system, my family, my coaches, my agent, all take care of that for me. So I just think about playing the golf.
For you, does it reduce the pressure a little bit to turn professional? We have seen some people, some great women's college golfers choose to remain amateurs recently, and this has always happened to a degree. But do you think it allows you to feel good about staying in college and staying an amateur for a little bit longer, or does it not make a difference in that regard?
I think I would have loved staying an amateur regardless. And I know that I want to turn pro at some point, so it doesn't have a huge impact on my thought process here. But maybe it does for others.
Cool. All right. So Mega, you know, you first came to my attention in 2021. The US Women's Open performance was incredibly impressive. Now, looking back on that 3 years afterwards, what jumps to mind from that experience of contending at a major championship?
Good question. That doesn't feel like 3 years ago. It feels more recent. But it's I think what jumps to mind is I feel so similar to when I was playing that final round right now and the person I am today. And at the same time, so many things are different. So I feel like I feel like I've retained the best parts of me that I had when I was 17 that allowed me to stay in the moment, enjoy that week, compete at the highest level, have that amount of confidence going into it. But then also evolve my game in a way that's maybe going to one day help me close it out on that Sunday. So I think over the past few years, I've been working towards that. And there was a lot of steps I needed to take to, you know, grow as a player. And I've taken those while kind of still keeping those really good parts of me that, you know, I feel like I inherently had. And striking that balance is something that comes to mind.
Yeah, this is the eternal tension between innocence and experience. You know, you're more experienced and so you're better, but maybe there are mental things, other things that kind of get a bit more in the way as you get older and wiser. Has that been what you've experienced?
I think the other way around, to be honest with you. I think less and less mental things get in my way. And I was only 17, and I realize I'm only 20 now, but I don't love when people say, like, oh my God, you had no idea what was going on. You were just a kid. Like, no, I had a fully formulated brain.
You were a person at this point. You weren't like a pre-person. You were a person.
I was a fully formed person. So I was there. I knew it was happening. I felt every bit of the pressure, and I experienced that level of pressure at other tournaments. And I think just because the stage is bigger, you assume a lot changes, but it really doesn't. And I think I've continued to have that spark on the golf course. And any moment I feel I'm losing that, I just feel like that's the most important thing, because that's why I play golf. And I work on fixing that first before I fix anything related to my golf game. So yeah, not an increase of any mental troubles, but it's just different. And I just think I've become more mature of a golfer, which you need to do.
What does it mean to become a more mature golfer?
Yeah, I think some decision making, being able to recognize my flaws better. I don't think when I was younger, I'd be like, oh, I need to work on that as much as I am now. Just being open to doing that, having better routines in my practice, in my warm up, in my what do I do after the round, a little more discipline, which are all good things, but I just still have as much fun. So, like I said, striking that balance.
You were in that final group.
Yeah.
At the tournament, Yuka Sasso and Lexi Thompson. Do I have that right? Because I remember watching this, and you know what. An exciting and kind of crazy final group and final round that was. From your perspective playing in it, were you kind of hyper focused on your own game, or did you take moments here and there to look outside of you and see what was going on with the other players and with the gallery and with the tournament? What do you remember from that?
I think for most of the round, I couldn't even tell you, because I just don't remember. Like, it's all a blur. Like, it feels like I just wasn't there. Like, the first three rounds, I was fully present. But that third round, just I don't even really have good recollection of it until, like, the 16th hole. Because it was just so intense. So I wasn't really – I don't know if I was taking it in or focusing on them or myself or my game, but something happened, and I just don't – I don't remember it very well. But once I hit the 16th hole, I think I really took it in. And yeah, I took in the crowd, you know, being there with my family, having them watching. Mike, who was caddying for me, we had just formed such a great friendship through that. And then playing with Yuka and Lexi and watching Yuka close it out. That was one of my core memories as well. And kind of just reflecting on that round, realizing like, I think I had the game to get me there, but like to really finish it out on Sunday, there's so many components that you need to get the job done. And just reminding myself, like, you're going to get there one day. And how do you do that? And you have the best experience possible to know how to do that when it's your time. So yeah, it was a fun day.
So, you know, looking forward to the next couple of weeks here, you know, what's your plan? What are you working on in your game? How do you prepare for this tournament specifically?
Yeah, I think the part of the prep is knowing that the prep is done, and just getting my body in good shape and like resting, sleeping, practicing an amount that's, you know, what's just going to get my headspace right, playing putting games that just get the confidence up, stuff like that. And then specifically just working on, you know, getting my yardages dialed, like my wedge numbers, like small stuff like that, but most of the work is done. So it's just about feeling good going into it. And we're leaving for a tournament tomorrow, so there's not going to be a lot of, you know, time to do a lot of practice before the ANWA, because we'll go straight there.
We're recording this on Monday, March 25th. What is the tournament that you're heading towards?
The ASU Invitational.
Gotcha. So you're going to be in Arizona. Are you going straight from there to Augusta? Are you going to spend a little bit of time there? Yeah. Okay. Do you feel like you have Augusta wired at this point? You kind of know your way around town, know where to stay, know where to eat, all that kind of stuff?
Yeah, definitely. And if I don't, my parents definitely do, because that's been our spring break for the past 8 years.
It's wild.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wild. All right. Well, Mega, thank you so much for spending this time with us. Good luck at ANWA.
Yeah, best
of luck. We'll be watching you with interest. Yeah.
Thanks for having me on. This is super fun.
Yeah, of course.
Of course. Thank you.
This episode of the Friday Golf Podcast was produced by Matt Ruscius. Thank you, Matt. If you'd like to support Friday Golf on another level, I would recommend our membership. That's called Club TFE. Go to thefriedegg.com/membership and see everything that we're offering there. On the content side, we're constantly posting new stuff in Club TFE that we're really excited about, really proud of. Our weekly course profiles, our in-depth looks at golf courses with great imagery captured by Andy and Cameron and Matt and our team. They're just, you know, we love doing these profiles. It's exactly the kind of content that we like doing, and we want as many people to check them out as possible. So that's available in Club TFE, again, thefriedegg.com/membership. Thank you for listening, and we'll be back again soon with another episode.